On November 6th and 7th, the UN General Assembly again will consider the Cuban resolution on the necessity of ending the economic, commercial, and financial blockade imposed by the United States of America against Cuba. The Cuban Ministry of Foreign Relations has distributed the report that will be submitted to the General Assembly in support of the resolution. The report asserts that from April 2018 to March 2019, the blockade caused losses to Cuba of more than $4 billion, and that the accumulated damage caused by the application of the blockade for nearly six decades has reached nearly $139 billion. The report analyzes the impact of the blockade in various sectors. In the area of health, the blockade has obstructed the acquisition of diagnostic technologies, raw materials for the fabrication of medicines, equipment, parts, and medicines. In the manufacture of food products, the blockade compels Cuban companies to purchase its raw materials from various markets, inasmuch as they are impeded from access to the U.S. market, which is the most attractive market due to its prices, its geographical proximity, and the variety of its products. In the tourist sector, the blockade cost an estimated $1.383 billion, taking into account the estimates of the number of U.S. citizens who would have traveled to Cuba if it were not for the blockade. In the pharmaceutical industry, the Center for Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology has lost more than $100 million due to the denial of its access to the U.S. market, where it could sell its medical product, Herbaprot P, unique in the world for its capacity to treat diabetic foot ulcers. In the area of communications, Telecommunications Company of Cuba, ATEXA, is continually denied access to the technological sites of the first line. In the area of financing, restrictions on the use of the U.S. dollar in commercial and financial transactions outside of Cuba compels the exchange of the U.S. currency with that of third countries, generating additional costs. And so on. The report presents figures on the cost to Cuba of the blockade. These figures, however, analyze concrete losses to Cuba in a context of a reality shaped by the blockade itself and the imperialist policies to which it pertains. The true cost of the blockade, in terms of denied opportunities for economic development, cannot be calculated. On July 6, 1960, the Cuban Revolutionary Government amended a law that authorized the nationalization of U.S. properties. The law established compensation for the properties in the form of government bonds that would mature in 30 years. It mandated the National Bank of Cuba to create a fund that would be fed by Cuban government deposits in an amount equal to 25% of the value of U.S. purchases of Cuban sugar in excess of the sugar quota. The intention of the revolution was to transform the exploitative sugar trade into mutually beneficial commerce, forming the basis for compensation for the nationalized properties as well as for the financing of investment in Cuban industry. Even though the U.S. government announced a reduction of the sugar quota on that same day of July 6th, 30 days later, when Fidel announced the first nationalizations of U.S. properties, he continued to advocate the Cuban proposal of compensation through U.S. purchase above the sugar quota, and he appeared to be optimistic that the U.S. government would accept the proposal. Fidel's vision of a cooperative, mutually beneficial relation between Cuba and the United States included an important role for the Cuban owners of industry. In 1959, Fidel spoke at organizations of business persons, and he called upon them to participate in the revolution. He appealed to them to invest in Cuban industry and to deposit their profits in Cuban banks so that the state could use bank reserves to invest in industrial production. These proposals were rooted in Fidel's belief in the need to promote economic development of the nation in order to satisfy the material needs of the people. The participation of Cuban industrialists in the revolutionary project required that they end their subordination to U.S. capitalists and participate in a Cuban national project for autonomous economic development, as some members of the Cuban capitalist class proposed after the triumph of the revolution. However, the Cuban capitalist class was too economically and ideologically weak to end its subordination to U.S. interests and to find common cause with the nationalist economic measures of the revolution. As a result, from mid-1959 to mid-1960, Cuban industrialists abandoned the country and participated in the U.S.-directed counter-revolution. On July 6, 1960, Fidel observed that the unfolding revolutionary process is demonstrating that those who previously had the control of the nation in their hands are now allies of foreign interests. On September 8, 1960, Fidel declared that the government does not want to nationalize Cuban properties because the country does not have a sufficient number of trained administrators. But, he stated, the counter-revolutionary attitude of Cuban proprietors obligates the government to act. On October 13th, the revolutionary nationalization of big Cuban industrial and commercial properties was initiated. What would have been the Cuban story if the proposal of the Cuban Revolution for cooperation had been accepted by the U.S. government and by the U.S. capitalist class? If the Cuban revolutionary government would have had access from the start to the investments and markets of the United States, always on the basis of Cuban insistence on investments and commerce that are beneficial for its development? What level of social and economic development would Cuba have been able to attain if the blockade had not been imposed and cooperation had emerged instead? The incapacity of the U.S. power elite to accept the 1959 proposal of the Cuban Revolution for cooperation was a consequence of its incapacity to see beyond the structures of the neocolonial world order and to defend its particular interest in the context of respect for the sovereignty of all nations. And this imperialist blindness pertains not only to Cuba, but to all of the neocolonized peoples of the earth who are seeking true sovereignty. Today, however, things should be clearer than in 1959. The unsustainability of the neocolonial world system is now evident, as is the need for a world order based on the sovereignty of all nations and mutually beneficial trade. North-South cooperation, demanded by the peoples of the South for more than six decades, is the necessary road for humanity. This is Charles McKelvey reflecting on the unfolding global popular socialist revolution forged by our peoples.